Everybody, welcome to Rumors, Money, and Movies. Thanks so much for joining us again. I'm your host, James Bestone. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at RMM_901. We just got a retweet from someone with like 20,000 followers, so go check that out. Also, you can follow us on Letterboxd at JABNYRIC. Now joining us, as I said, we're going to have an interview. We do have one now. He's an actor, stunt actor in the industry, voice actor in the industry, has some other jobs on the side that he does outside of acting. He's Richmond alumni, Jasper Pendergrass Jr. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Jasper, everyone that has on the podcast, ask them two very important questions to start the show. Always, doesn't matter who you are. What's your relationship with film, and what's your favorite movie?
Oh, wow. My relationship with film, well, so about what, 23, 24 years in now. So my relationship with film would be tug of war, tug of love, not hate, because, you know, I don't hate it, I love it, but like, I'd say tug of war. And my favorite movie, I have two movies up there, and no one ever can believe that these are my favorite movies. Some people haven't heard of it, but one movie, number one, everybody, I'm sure, have heard of it, is Grease. I love Grease. Grease is one of my favorite movies since I was probably a teenager, a young teen. And a movie called The Five Heartbeats. I'm not sure, a lot of people might not know what that movie is, but it's another type of musical. I love music. I just love the art.
Great. Okay, I'll be sure to check that second one out. Obviously, Grease is, everyone knows Grease. That's not a bad pick at all. So before you were a actor, we'll talk a little bit about that transition, but you were actually a very successful running back at the University of Richmond. You just want to talk a little bit about, before I gas up your numbers here, you want to talk a little bit about your footballing career and how you ended up at Richmond?
Oh, man. I started playing football when I was about 5 years old. So it's a lot of football. I come from a huge, huge, athletically talented family. So my oldest brother played football. My brother ahead of him played football, all for the same high school, same Pop Warner, mind you. Cousins in South Carolina. My family's in South Carolina, but I grew up in the DMV. Everybody played sports. It was mainly baseball and football, and we sprinkled some basketball in there. And my senior year in high school, my junior year was pretty cool, but I was always playing behind I was always the bigger back, but I was playing behind smaller, also like really good running back. So my junior year, I probably didn't get as much action as I'd say I probably should have, which is understandable. But my senior year in high school was just, I mean, outstanding. My first game of my senior year, I think I had 318 yards. Second game, I had 258 yards. Third game, I had 196 yards. So it was kind of like, wow, this is crazy. So I knew that I had a really good chance of playing football in college. But then, I guess, during the football season, I had been getting letters from, I mean, oh, man, I just almost every college in the country. And over only one big school, University of Tennessee. Back then, the head coach was Philip Fulmer, came to my house and wanted me to say, I want you to come to Tennessee. And that would have been the class that I think Peyton Manning was coming in with.
You should have went there, Jasper.
Yeah, no, but wait. I thought that I was going there. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought I was going there, and I was going to on a visit that Friday, and then the coach called me. He goes, hey, Jasper, we had, I think it was two or three tailback scholarships, and a guy came on a visit a week before he committed, and like two other guys committed before they went on their visit. We would love for you to walk on first semester, and we can find some money for you. You know, all I heard was walk on, pay money, and I knew that I had done enough to not have to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a middle child of five. And so that, for me, I thought that I was going to be a Tennessee volunteer, but didn't really work out that way. And then that's how, a couple of weeks later, I went on my Richmond visit. Mm-hmm. And as you know, the Richmond, the school was beautiful. Yeah. So my parents fell in love with it. Back then, I think the coach's name was Jim Marshall. They pulled us in the office and pretty much put you on the spot. Like, they'll put you on the spot. And I was like, y'all come. You know what I mean? Because, I was 17 by then. And it's one of those things where, you know, you see Tennessee Volunteers all the time on national TV, and you thought that, you know, you pretty much thought you were going to go there, because the coach is sitting in the living room telling you that I want to come. This the guy you see every week on Saturday.
Yeah.
But that being said, I did land at Richmond, and I still, to this day, that was still a good decision, because there were still other schools out there that wanted me to come there to their school. But I think I made the right choice in the end.
Yeah, you could have won a national championship, though.
Yeah, exactly.
But
I could have been in Omaha.
Yeah, that's all right. That's the butterfly effect, though. You wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be the person you are today if you went to Tennessee, though, I'm sure.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, I found this article on the Collegian from 98, and it says, he speaks softly and carries a big stick. Do you remember this interview that you did with them?
No, I do not remember that.
You gotta
email that to me.
Yeah, it's an interview about how you had to sit behind, how you could have had more carries your senior year, but you had to share carries in the backfield, and this whole story about your story. But I also found the fact that in 98, you were on the third team, all 10 team. And then I read your statistics. You were a very accomplished running back. So you ran for 276, then you ran for 695 and had 8 touchdowns. And then your final season ran for over 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. Now, do you remember your last college game? Do you remember your statistics of your last college game?
I definitely remembered my last college game. I don't remember the statistics exactly, but I think I had like 2 touchdowns, 100, maybe 140 some yards, something like that. But I don't remember exactly the numbers.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, you were the 3 seed, number 3 team in the country for FCS football, and I'm sure you remember the game, a crushing loss. We'll talk about it in a second. But 148 yards on 28 carries, 2 touchdowns, and then 1 reception for 9 yards. So you had over 150 all-purpose yards, 2 touchdowns. That's a pretty damn good performance to end your college career on.
Yeah, you know, it was definitely bittersweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you guys, the last year week of the season, you lost to Lehigh at home in the playoffs. And then you talked about, I've read several articles, how you were planning or you were hoping to make it to the NFL. I just want to talk a little bit about, you didn't get drafted. You weren't, you know, signed as a free agent. You didn't get a practice squad or anything like that. How was that, you know, your whole life building to this football moment to go on to the professional level? You didn't. How was that to you? How was that moment, the decision-making, what came out of it? Just talk us through that a bit.
You know, it was, you know, I'm not going to say it was crushing, but it was definitely disappointing. You're right. But from my standpoint, there were people around, I mean, I guess the University of Richmond, maybe coaches or whatever, who didn't think that this is my opinion. I'm just going to be real, who did not think that I'm not so much that I didn't have what it take, but it was about the speed. I was a bigger back and I wasn't as fast as other backs. But, you know, like I said, I did my damage in other ways, because you think I'm going to run you over and I'm going to still make you miss. I might not run away from you, but I had I had a 60-yard touchdown one year. I had, you know, an 80-yard run. I got caught from behind, but, you know, I just think that in some way, and this is not everybody, there are definitely people who are on your side. And I think there were people, like some of the people who, if you think that someone doesn't have what it takes, you maybe not going to maybe back them as much as maybe you may back someone else that you think might have what it takes, which is understandable. And it took me a while to deal with that, because I heard a couple of rumblings from my agent and things that kind of happened behind the scenes, and which kind of took me a while to get over that. But at the end of the day, all you can do is show up, train, do the best you can. And then it'll work out or won't work out. And if it doesn't work out, then you have to kind of redirect, which I had to redirect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk about your first job, and then how you, so you didn't get the NFL. What was your first job in film? How'd that come together? How'd you enter the industry?
Oh man, it's literally, if I ever write a book, I'm going to write a book one day. I think I need to do a few more things, but it's like a story, man. I have a teammate, his name was Seth Wyman. And I guess his brother was living in D.C. And like I said, I grew up in a suburb of D.C. And it was a voicemail on my parents' machine. And I don't know where I was. I get back and he goes, "Hey, Jasper, man, Seth here. What's up, buddy?" My brother's girlfriend works for an art department in a movie. They're filming in Baltimore. They need football players. You know, we're gonna go try out. I was like, yeah, what else am I doing? You know what I mean? I was in the best shape of my life. I just got finished working off all these NFL football teams. And like I said, four of us went up there. Me, Seth went, my friend Elio Embernone. Like Seth played line. Elio played, I graduated a year before, but Elio played fullback. And then Joe Douglas, who's now the GM of the New York Jets, we all piled up. And sure enough, man, they put us through a football combine. And what people may not know that these football movies, they pretty much have the same guys kind of travel from movie to movie, the same kind of group of guys. Wow. So it was like 35 guys who had just come off of Any Given Sunday. And which is for me is probably the second best football movie ever, next to The Program.
Okay.
But we go up there, they put us through a football combine, and I'm just up there, and I'm like I said, I'm still all the other skill guys, the other running back guys are smaller than me. But I wrecked it. You know, I ran fast. We did one-on-ones. I caught the ball. I made people miss and all that. And so I ended up, myself and Joe Douglas ended up making that movie. And to me, that was the first thing that I've ever done. And I was 22 years old. And still, still learning lessons from that first one, because when you do that, you go, you see all those cameras and everything, you see how you immediately think, oh, this is how life is. Cool. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget these two names, because they're the guys who hired us for that movie, Alan Graf and Mark Ellis. They were the football coordinators on that job, and they were the ones that picked me for that job. And you know, right now, like I said, my story is still being written, but that definitely started it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the movie Jess was referring to is The Replacements.
Replacements, yes.
Gene Hackman, Keanu Reeves. So that's pretty awesome that your first gig on that kind of, that's a big film. That's a legit film.
Yeah. Orlando Jones, Faison Love. Like, it was an awesome, it was a lot of people in that movie.
Mm-hmm. And so you're in this really big film, right? The Replacements. So, okay. So what then? Where'd you transition to? What was life after that first big get? And why did you realize I want to be in film after this first film?
Well, actually, I didn't know it then. So, Alan Graf, they pulled us all together, the guys who was their first movie. He said, "Hey guys, I don't know if you guys ever want to, this might be your only movie. You might go on to do more." But Baltimore, Maryland was called a union state. So the Baltimore, Maryland is a union state. So they're going to let you guys join SAG right now on your first show, which it takes some people 10 years or longer to join SAG. And so back then it was only like $1,300, $1,400 and we were getting paid, you know what I mean? So, and now I think it costs like $3,500 to join SAG. And so I joined SAG just because, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know. I didn't know I was going to be here in that moment, let alone anything else. So, but after that, I went and played, and I still had a football agent. So I went and played arena football for 3 years. So I went from the first movie and went and played arena football, arena two, the one where they really don't pay you well. And that's what it was. And then when I came back, I started substitute teaching. And then I was a full-time teacher, middle school teacher in inner city, Washington, D.C. And during that time, I got a call to audition for The Wire. Mm. And so I went in the call and I went to audition for a one word part. And they called me back and said, "Jasper, we're going to give you a bigger role. We think you're good to fit a bigger role." And so I went and did that. That was my second thing, but that was also my first time speaking on camera because, mind you, The Replacement, I was just a football player. We were doing all the stunt stuff and all the hitting, whatever, but we never spoke. Like right. Some guys were lucky enough to get a line here and there, but the Wire, I had three scenes, and two of those scenes I was speaking. And if you go back, it's the season two Storm Warnings. I think it's the last episode of season two. And you can tell, like, I think you can tell my first scene that I'm speaking, I think I sounded nervous. You know what I mean? It's like an exciting nervous, but people think that they can be an actor or whatever, but when that camera's in your face, it's a whole nother story than when you're doing voices for your family at Thanksgiving dinner. You know what I mean? but that first scene, you can tell that I was nervous. But then that last scene, night scene, I settled down, and then I really started feeling good about it. But yeah, so The Wire was my second thing, and then I went back and taught school, and then less than a year later, I got called to come try out for the movie, my second movie out here, The Longest Yard.
Yes. It's an awesome story. If you don't mind me asking, what arena football team did you play? Like, you must have been in a random part of the country, or were you close to home, or how did that work?
It's so weird. So I went, drove down. It was halfway through the season, almost to the end of the season. And my agent always told me, oh, you need some blocking film. You go down here, get the arena football, get some blocking film. We send it to the league, and bam, you're going to be in there. So I had to drive. I jumped in my car, my truck. And I drove 15 and a half hours to Pensacola, Florida. So I played for a team called the Pensacola Barracudas. And then that coaching staff, the next year, was in Norfolk. So I came back and played for them again for the Norfolk Nighthawks.
Yeah.
After that coach had gotten fired. And then the next year, they went back to Pensacola. So the next year, I went right back to Pensacola. At this time, I'm like, you know what? What am I, probably 25 years old, and I'm like, man, this is great. I love playing football, but like this, we were poor. We were living, it was four of us living. Like, they had enough money to give two people apartments, like the offensive specialist, which is a quarterback, or a defensive specialist, which is your best DB. And then so everybody else had to do what you got to do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sink or swim. So four of us, you know, we would get our apartments, man, and then, you know, we had odd jobs. So I probably had every job you ever known, man. One time, I think we went to a temp agency. Like we had no money. Went to a temp agency, and they would just send you out on jobs. And one time, me and my roommate, we were cleaning a pool, right? And I was like, oh, that's cool, but no water. And it was literally, I think we were in Norfolk, but it was the hottest out there. It was in the summertime, and we're using chemicals to clean this pool. And I remember thinking to myself, this is awful. But yeah. I love playing football, and I love doing it. You have to do the things that it takes, and if you're not there yet, then it must mean that you need to do more.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But it's been some experiences. But I know I go off on tangents. But yeah, the two
That's
teams
awesome.
Pensacola Barracudas, and Norfolk Nighthawks.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, that was when I know you said it was in arena football too, but. That was after Kurt Warner, obviously, like, had his miracle run. And that was on NBC, too, Arena Football 1. That was when Arena Football was pretty popular. Like, that boom back in the early 2000s. So, nothing.
They got paid decent money in Arena 1. We did not in Arena 2.
Yeah. But that must have been fun. Not fun, but you must look back on that somewhat nostalgic that time period.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. So, then you've had some other gigs in between The Longest Yard and now. I mean, because I want to talk a little bit about your latest gig, but you want to talk about any of your other gigs that you've had over the years?
Oh man, it's been so many, man. I think I've done probably seven football movies alone, and some were good, some were bad. One show, because I started slowly moving from just doing football things to now doing stunt things and then getting things with lines. So I did Sons of Anarchy. And I'm going to say my claim to fame is I was the third to last person to die on Sons of Anarchy. You know what I mean? And then I remember because I told my mom it was going to happen. And my mom and my sisters, they were like, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see you die on TV. I'm like, Mom, it's fake. It's not real. But, you know, so Sons of Anarchy. And then I had another good quick show on Blackish with Anthony Anderson. Anthony Anderson beat me up, punched me, threw me to the ground. Things like that. So those were two really good ones, man. Then, you know, recently, the Wakanda series has been really good to me as well.
Yeah. So before we get into that, you've also done a lot of commercial work. You just want to talk about the difference between, from your perspective, doing football movies versus doing stunts versus doing something in a commercial, and how you differentiate between your commercial work and your film work, and what's the difference between those two?
Well, as far as football, first of all, that's so there's one thing that like productions get away with, and that's that instead of they should pay all football players, no matter if it's a commercial, no matter whether it's a movie, they should pay them as stunt people, because that's what we're doing. But because we specialize that, because we play, a lot of guys play in the NFL, college, semi-pro, whatever, because we've done that, they label them as special ability extras, right? Mm-hmm. Which means they can pay you a lot less money and not give you residuals. So, but as far as the actual work in itself, it's the same. It's the same, because in a commercial, you just draw it. You draw up a play, you do the play. In the movies, you draw up the play, you do the play. You just make it look good. I think Coach Graff used to call it choreographed football. Like, we all know where everything's going. You know what's going to happen. You know that guy's going to run that ball right there and get hit by that guy. Now it's up to the rest of you guys to make it so when the camera's pointed back toward and watching the guys, you're not sitting there watching that play happen. You need to be blocking. You need to be hitting the ground. You need to be doing something just to keep everything alive and keep everything real. And it's all about just making it real, whether it's a commercial or TV show or a movie. It's pretty much all done the same as far as the choreographed football part of it is concerned. They pay you a lot better for doing it for commercials versus TV and film.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah, so that's actually really cool. I didn't know the thing about the football. You're not getting paid as stuntman. I mean, quick intersection here before we get into your last role. I mean, I feel like there's this sort of mentality among... I mean, there's always the issue, should the stunts be a part of the Oscars? And there's this general sort of like looking down upon of stuntmen or stuntwomen. But now there's sort of a revitalization. As a stunt person, as a stunt actor, do you want to just talk about the importance of stunts? What you guys do, how you guys put your bodies on the line, and just sort of your pride in what you do with stunts.
Exactly. So they definitely should make stunts a part of any award show that you have, as far as commercial, movie, TV shows, because like they say the thing, lights, camera, action, right? You have lights and camera with the actors, but the stunt people are the ones that's giving you the action. The stunt people, all those movies that make millions and millions of dollars, there are stunt people out there they're the ones that make, like, the actors get you there and the actors tell the story, but stunt people are the ones that are giving you that action to make that story that's being told real. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? To make it realistic. And so a lot of, it's weird, you're right, a lot of people, even on some sets, you know, they'll treat stunt people differently than they're treating the actors. And I understand why. However, people might not know this, but the basic stunt contract and the basic acting contract are the exact same amount of money. No difference. The only difference is that when you start getting more acting roles, you know, you start getting a bigger name. Now your agent or your manager, whoever your representation is, can say, well, we've done X, Y, Z. We need to come this high up over scale. But stunt people can do the same thing. And I think that in large part, it's almost better if you're not going to be some big star, it's almost better to be a stunt person. Because if I'm an actor and the public has seen me in multiple shows over the years, or I got this blockbuster movie, that producer that might have a movie 3 months later, probably not going to call me because, you know, people know who I am. But as a stunt person, stunt double, but as a stunt person, especially if you're not recognizable, and you can be recognizable, you can jump from movie to movie to movie to movie, because you're not, like, your face isn't getting burned out. Like, people aren't going to get tired of you. And especially if you're making the exact same money as the base acting contract. But yeah, stunts are very important, man. And it's every time, everything you turn around, and I was thinking about in the car, I was thinking about things that you might ask me. And then this is like a question that I kind of felt like you were going to ask me. But it's kind of like you're going to watching a movie or a show, and it's about to be a bar fight. And these guys, and they're yelling and cursing at each other. And then all of a sudden, they shake hands and walk away. Now, wait a minute, someone's missing. Where's the fight? You know what I mean? Like, you know it's about to be the fight. You can anticipate it happening, about to happen, but then they walk away because the thing that's going to make that scene interesting is watching them beat each other up, fall through windows, fall off, you know, whatever. Yeah. That's what's going to make that interesting. So yeah, I do think that they, when we do now, I did get a stunt award for Black Panther 1. We got a best stunt ensemble Screen Actors Guild Awards, mm-hmm. right? And we are SAG, so you know that was a big honor. But they do have that same award for the Oscars and things like that. So they do have that kind of blanket award, which is awesome. But I do think that they should kind of break these things down for some of these shows and some of these movies. Because Black Panther, I mean, I know you're going to talk about it, but like some of these people who are doubling some of these actors often, even if you're not doubling, but some of the things that these that we do, and it's really amazing just to watch it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So speaking of Black Panther, that's obviously like, what would you say before we get into sort of the stunt specific stuff? How was that different? Because a lot of actors tell me different productions, you know, you can kind of tell like based off the budget and things. And there's no like sort of bigger movies based off like sort of just like budget financial scale than like a Marvel movie. So how was that experience working on like a superhero movie where stunts are more profound and also the budget's more profound? Was that different than say working on like a regular football commercial or something like that?
Oh yeah, one main difference that's kind of an aside is that when you're on a commercial set, it moves faster. We got to get this in one day or 2 days or even like 3 or 4 days. So these things, you have to move faster. On movies, you're going to be on a movie for 3 months. You have a lot more time to get that right shot, get that perfect shot. But what was the main point of it that you just asked me?
It's like, well, because a lot of actors tell me, like, when you talk about, like, the bigger the movie, like, the entire set just is different. And how was that for you when you work on, like, a Marvel movie?
Yeah, you can tell, basically, like, back Black Panther, they have all, you know, you're in a big warehouse. So I'm not sure if you've seen the second one yet, but you're in a big warehouse, and you can see. And when once you watch that movie and you see they're going from this country to that country and all that stuff, but they built all those mini sets all inside and outside of that warehouse. You can definitely tell what the bigger budget movies are, but it's kind of the same with commercial. You know what's the biggest, but like when it's a big budget. I did a Nike commercial years ago. Michael Mann was the director. When you see Michael Mann walk on set, you're like, wait, this is not just some regular commercial. This thing's real. And when that movie came out, I mean, when that commercial came out, it looked like a movie. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. This is probably about 12 years ago. So you can definitely tell who's spending the money based on those budgets. But they also know that they're going to get that money back tenfold because these, you know, everybody was going to go see Black Panther 2 or Black Panther Wakanda Forever based on what happened in the first one. And then, you know, unfortunately, Chadwick died in real life. And so you pour that money in because you know that you're going to get that back. Or sometimes somebody have an indie film or something like that, they might have trouble getting funded for that movie. Mm-hmm. But a studio is going to throw money at a big superhero movie. They're here. Take as much as you want because they know they're going to get it back. But that indie film, I don't know what you got for collateral kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can definitely tell the bigger ones.
Yeah. So I've seen several. You did an interview with the school, University of Richmond. I saw you an interview with the athletic department. You talked about how, like, Wakanda Forever was really sort of like a meaningful film to you. Let's talk to the audience listening about, like, how it was working on sort of such a big film, such an important film, obviously, and just for you both professionally, personally, what that film meant to you.
Wakanda Forever, man. Well, it starts with the first one. Like, I was fortunate enough to work on both movies. And the first time, I only did the reshoot, so I was only supposed to be there for 3 weeks. Only ended up being there for 4 days because they were so over budget. And for a movie like that to be over budget is insane. But it was amazing to go out, and as far as we hadn't seen a black superhero, I don't think ever, that carried that kind of magnitude. And so to go out in Atlanta or outskirts of Atlanta, and go and you see there's 70 black stuntmen and women out there, and you're like, wow, like I this is something that I've never seen before, and I probably will never see this again. It was groundbreaking, and I was so honored because you've never seen anything like that before, and because you've never seen a black superhero, and I was able to be a part of a small part of the making of that. And Wakanda Forever, I was fortunate enough to be there for about a month and a half now this time. And it's the same thing, the same professionalism. Like everybody is just, everybody loves each other. Everybody just wants to help each other do what they do the best that they can. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, all of our names are on this project. And can you imagine the responsibility of having to follow the first Black Panther, and then you lay a dud in the second one? Like, wow, that's kind of, you get. But everybody's confident, and everybody was just so amazing. It was such an honor to be on both of those films. And it's something that I'll personally be able to carry for the rest of my life.
Yeah, so that's really greatly said. And I mean, now you've been in the industry, right? You've made it, you know, maybe not like you're the biggest movie star ever, but you've been in real roles. You've done a lot of legitimate work and stuff like that, like Wakanda Forever. And I just want to say to the audience too, is like, from my limited experience as a PA and these other things, there's so much that goes into making a movie. And people like Jasper not be like the, you know, the MVP of the movie, but without him and without what he's doing, that movie wouldn't have been able to be the same quality. And so how would you view for yourself at this point in your film career, but even in anything really, like success for you, right? Because you weren't, you know, you're not going to be the next Tony Dorsett, right? You weren't going to be the next Emmett Smith, but you made it as a college player. You even played semi-professional football in the Arena Football Association, and now you've made it as sort of an actor. How would you describe like success and how you look back on your career?
Well, so I don't define it as being successful or not successful. I just feel like I didn't give up, right? So success is kind of like a relative term, man. It's like people say you realize your dream, you followed your dream. You know what I mean? You're following your dream. Like the word dream is, you think about dreams as something that happens when you're sleeping. But if you have a goal, I was lucky enough to not want to be an actor my entire life. The stunt work kind of fell into my lap. Now, after some heartbreak for myself, you know what I mean? But it goes back to me saying you have to redirect. But your dream, like once you, if you, people say, I dream of this, I dream of that. I'm like, you put a date on something, it's no longer a dream. It's a goal. If you start saying, okay, I know I want to end up doing XYZ, how can I get there? And you say, I'm gonna take this class, or I'm gonna do this fight class and those things. Now you set a plan in place to making it to that goal. You know what I mean? So for me, I'm gonna always have a goal. I'm gonna always be ready for whatever comes next based on the things that I've done. Like I said, I'm riding horses every Saturday now because I want to get in some of these cowboy movies or cowboy TV shows. No one's called me about that yet. You know, no one, but I'm a year in because I've set that as a goal for myself. You know what I mean? I'm learning how to rope and the saddle people. You know what I mean? I have definitely experienced a certain level of success when it comes to where I started But in my mind, I have so much more to do. I have a lot more things that to do. My goals are every day I wake up, I might have a new goal. I'm like, oh man, that's interesting. I'm gonna try that. How can I get to that? How can I start laying the blueprint on how I can be successful doing that, doing whatever that activity is, man? Because I think the most, your portfolio, the more things you can throw in your portfolio, the better. People were saying, I do have people out there that used to say, or they might be still saying, jack of all trades, ace of nothing. I think the people who said that would, first of all, they had probably never been good at anything, or maybe just been good at one thing. You know what I mean? Because if you can do multiple things well, then why not do those things? You know, like don't listen to them, all the naysayers out there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why listen to that? I do this great. Why wouldn't you want me to do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the way success is, man. I wake up every day and I just keep on going, just keep on training. And what's going to happen in my life has yet to be determined, but I know I'm going to be ready for it.
That's great. That's a great philosophy to have. I wish more people had that philosophy. I mean, you just kind of honestly move right into my next question, which is, what's next for Jasper Pendergrass Jr.? I mean, doesn't have to be anything film related. Just like, what's on the horizon? What should people be looking out for? And what are your goals going forward?
Well, first of all, I know that there is a movie coming out. I'm not sure when it's going to come out, but it's called Far Haven. And I was lucky enough, my buddy Dan Norris, who was the stunt coordinator, who was one of the guys who moved out here with me. You know, we piled into my expedition, me, Dan, myself, Dan Norris, and Justin Skinner. That's going to always going to be a part of my book as well, that long drive and how one of us couldn't even drive 30 minutes. But that's neither here nor there. But it's a movie called Far Haven. And I have one day, went to Arizona, I got one day on it, but that's one day that, you know, that I may not have had if I didn't get that phone call.
Right.
But yeah, I'm just preparing, man. I'm just preparing and just training for things that I don't even know that's coming, man. Like I said, my story is, man, it's a story of persistence, the story of discipline, and most importantly, it's a story of faith. You know what I mean? And no matter what people believe in, you have to have faith in something, even if it's just not, even if it's yourself. You know what I mean? So I'm riding horses. I'm determined to be on something riding a horse at some point this year. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Because I'm preparing myself for it. And I, on a daily basis, I'm still auditioning for TV shows and commercials. I have great theatrical. I got through great management and a really good commercial agent as well. So my team working hard for me on a daily basis, man. So their responsibility is to get me in front of agencies and things like that. So my responsibility is to make sure that I'm ready when I get those auditions, man. So that's just my day to day in doing that. And then like I said, I work with kids. I teach PE in South Central Los Angeles. So I wake up every day and do that too. So it's kind of like, you know, and I host karaoke. You know, it's always like, it's, you know, like my life, a guy told me just years ago, I don't even remember who the guy is, but he's like, hey man, you got to stay in traffic, stay busy. So now I'm like, now if I get a moment, if I get a few nights that I haven't done anything, I'm like, man, I kind of feel like I need to do something. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. I mean, someone told me, I was listening and the best advice I ever had was, you got to think it to believe it to achieve it. If you don't think it, you're never going to believe it. And if you never believe it, you're never going to achieve it. So that's a great mentality to have, is always be believing in yourself and thinking about it. And so some people who do this, as someone like myself who's trying to make it in this industry and other people that I know, what would be advice to, you know, people who are trying to make it in this industry, things that you've learned over the years working in the film industry and TV industry?
Well, first thing, for me, I would say the most important thing is you better learn how to take rejection. You know, this is probably the coldest industry that you can be in, because you can audition, you can walk in a casting agency and it'd be 50 people in there and you're hoping that they got four roles and then you can at least cut yourself down to, you know, 12 people, 11 other people going for your role, but there're going to be 50 people in there reading for the exact same thing you're reading for. And you can't be discouraged. So they'll give you two, they'll call you in for two, three auditions. You're like, man, I'm about to get this, man. I'm about down to the last two people. And then, but then they don't call you and say, oh, like a job might be like, you know what, you had a strong interview, but you know, we're going to go a different direction. No, you just don't hear anything. You don't hear anything over and over and over again. So the number one thing I would say is to learn how to take rejection and let that rejection fuel you, right? Make that rejection make you want to work even harder, because it's going to happen. I don't care. Denzel Washington, Meryl Streep, they probably, if they were told yes every time, they probably have 50 more movies. You know what I mean? But when you do start booking stuff, you still start getting stuff, because I've made a lot of mistakes. But you know, things like when I, in 2007, I had seven national commercials in 1 year. And I was like, right. But I was also a substitute teacher. So I'm like, you know what? Why am I subbing? I got seven national commercials running, right? And then the money always runs out. Mm-hmm. If you don't have, especially if you don't have another strand of income coming in, the money always runs out. So once you start booking that, even though, hey, you know what? You get a first big check. You know what? Go ahead out and, you know, splurge a little bit. But like after that, I've done that. But make sure that you're keeping some of that money or whatever, because even if you're busy and you're just rocking and rolling, there's always a dead point, man, because people don't like to always see the same people over and over and over again. That's one of the reasons why maybe some of your favorite actors, you know, you'd be like, what? Where have they been? 5 years later, bam, they got a movie, or 6 years later, got a show. Because it's always a lull. You know what I mean? So try to get good in as many things as possible to try to negate that law, right? So like I said, I'm, you know, voiceover. I'm still getting into voiceovers. I've done a couple of voiceovers, but I want to do a lot more. You got the voiceovers, man, the hosting. I'm hosting karaoke, but I want to be able to host shows. It can be a cable access show. It don't matter. I want to be able to realize that from all the work. Then there's the stunts, and then there's the acting stuff. So you get good in as many things you can. People say, keep the faith, my blessings come in and all that thing. Whenever your blessing comes, make sure you're ready to receive it, because if you're not ready, if you haven't done the training, if you haven't done the preparation, then that blessing is going to come and then go away because you didn't handle your part, you know? So just be ready. Get as good as many things as you can. If you have the energy, I'm not a big sleeper. So if I get five and a half hours, I'm great. You know what I mean? So like, you know, I'll wake up tomorrow morning, 5:30, try to run, you know, 2 or 3 miles before work. And then just make sure I get that part out the way, because you can't not stop training. Cannot stop training. I'm going to sign up for a stunt driving course, because no matter what, you may be able to drive a car. It's great. You may be able to turn wheelies or whatever. And I luckily did a stunt driving job just kind of on a whim, because they needed somebody to drive real fast. But those jobs come when you go take that course, pay that money. You pay that money. Now you and those guys, you on their list. Now you start getting more and more driving stuff, man. So just get as good and get good at as much things as possible, and just try to be smart, because especially if you're out here in Los Angeles, there are a lot of things that can derail you. So just try to stay smart, get good, be disciplined, and again, that number one thing is learn to take rejection, because you're gonna have, even I still have those moments where I'm like, man, like, what else can I do, right? Yeah. What else can I do? Thousands of people have that moment out here. What else can I do? You know what I mean? I'm doing all that I can do. And but then you'll get one, but then you still can't relax. But it's literally the only thing. This entertainment industry is the only thing that gives me the same energy as when I play football. Mm. You know what I mean? But it's harder. It's not hard as in, you know, all the practices and things like that. But football made me mentally tough, right? So I think that being in athletics, man, that just made me more, because nobody yells at me, but the rejection is you don't got to yell at me to keep on, you know, to not let book that job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's tough, man. And it's only the people who are the most mentally tough people who are going to be able to withstand it. Unless everybody gets, every now and again, there's somebody to get lucky. Sometimes that does happen, but for the majority of us, like Coach Reed used to say, Richmond, well, I don't know who said it, but he posted it on the locker room, and embrace the process. So all I'm doing is just simply embracing the process, and I'm going to keep embracing the process. And if I stay in this same realm until I retire, then I've still done a lot of good, and I still have things that I can talk about. I can still have things that I can reminisce, but I'm doing the work that's going to make it. I have a lot more that I'm going to be doing.
Yeah. I mean, and that's how it should be. You're only in the fifth inning or whatever, fourth inning, so you're got plenty of time to get the result that you want. Well, Jasper, thanks so much for coming on. Thank you for your great answers, and thanks for spending some time with us at RMM.
Oh, man, it was an honor and a pleasure, man. I always look for any opportunity to talk.
Yeah. No, we'll be in touch, man, and I really appreciate you coming on. And everyone else enjoy the interview with Jasper. And you want to plug your social media real quick, Jasper, if people can want to follow you on socials?
For sure, for sure. So Facebook, of course, is Jasper Pendergrass Jr. And my IG is at Dark and Stormy 46. That's at DARK, the letter NSTORMY 46. Dark and Stormy 46.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Jasper. I really appreciate you coming on. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you in a couple of weeks as we continue to advance and as we continue to preview the Oscars coming up in about a month from where this podcast is going to get released. So thanks, everybody, for joining Rumors, Money, and Movies. I'm James Bastone. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.